Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is incredible. We bring back Mumbot to talk through what's been going on for her in 2025 and what's coming up in 2026 and the cool project she's got going on, what it's like working at conventions, her video game that she's been working on that's in beta, and all kinds of cool stuff. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. If you want to follow us on all socials, at Toys on Tap, that's where you can find us. And if you want to jump on to support the show, it's Patreon, patreon.com/ToysOnTap. That's where you find extra goodies and all the extra cool stuff. And if you want to support more, you can go on and support the Lucky Kaiju Claw. It is up for pre-orders right now. Don't miss it. We are taking these orders because we believe in this project, and Kickstarter was awful to us. And so we are moving forward with it. We're going to make it happen. Now let's get back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. So welcome back. Like every other episode, please introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello, I'm Mumbot, and I am a new media contemporary artist, storyteller, world builder, and toy designer, and founder of Mumbot World and an international creative community called Ghost Club.
That's what I'm talking about. That title is so good. catch me up over the last, because I think it was last year, way early this year, that we kind of dove into who you are. Now we're kind of catching up on your career and where you've been headed for 2025.
Yeah, for 2025, I mean, it's just been a really, busy year. A lot of expanding the awareness of what I do and my characters and the world, like, outside of the US, I would say. You know, I spent a little more time in Asia. So I traveled to Hong Kong, Singapore, no Taipei this year, since that conflicted with DesignerCon. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, I've been in two different ways, like trying to focus more on like building more long-term thought out projects, and then also continuing to get out there, you know, and just like put myself in new spaces where this allows for discovery, which I think is really important for what we do.
As an artist, this is already such a good segue, because conventions they're meant to sell. Right. Like you get there, you're just pumping all your stuff, who you are, you're on display. How do you functionally build something long term when all of these things are slated for you to sell right there?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, because I think that's where balance comes in, you know, and you definitely have to know what to prioritize. Depending on what your goals are and what are your intentions are. So doing shows or doing any shows where your work is on display, mm-hmm. right? You should have certain goals. And I think that like, depending on what your intentions are, it affects how you present yourself or what you're building. So for me, sales are not the only goal. If sales were ever my only goal, I mean, obviously sales are great. Like we need to, keep lights on and be able to continue making art. So sales are huge and very important. And I am extremely grateful for any support in that aspect, because it's key. But also it can't be the only goal, because then you kind of get more focused. You get too focused on making things to sell, which can become uninteresting as well to the consumer or to the collector, in my opinion. So I don't know if I'm going too off your question, but
this is great.
I think like when you're showing up at all these things, you know, one piece of the pie is definitely hope to have some sales. And so you want to have something people can take home. Because a lot of people, that's what they want. They actually do. They come to see you, but they also want to be able to take some piece of that experience home. Or they are there for a specific thing that you shared that they want. And then like the other element is like, you know, the interactions, having a memorable like interaction with people. And obviously like kind of giving people a peek at like more, you know, like more that you have to offer, or hopefully like I said earlier, just having enough on display that there's like that discovery element that all different types of people who might not have any idea who you are could pique their interest and bring them in.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Yeah. You're describing something. I think why I'm so interested in this, like Toys on Tap as a whole is in a weird spot where we help artists make things and we'll get it out there and sell them. But if the podcast ever stops, like then I just become a machine of capitalism. I'm just producing to sell and not building anything. And so that really came to, like when I saw you at DesignerCon, I was like working through that in my head of like, what do I want this to be?
I love that. That's really cool that you're aware of it though, too. Cause I feel like some people aren't aware of it. And I think if like you can build a platform, which I believe anybody is capable of doing, if they in their own way, like it doesn't not necessarily have to be a podcast, but it could be, you know, in some other format that you're building some sort of platform where if that's your passion, it's like, you know, building awareness of artists that you love. That's also one of my passions as well. So I think that finding ways to feature them and tell their stories. I mean, podcast is obviously an amazing one and you're good at it. And I think that doing the shows again is just like one additional way for people to interface, but in person, and then actually have like this like physical piece that they can, you know, like a totem that kind of bonds that experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the other part of your question before that about like having time to build something long term, I mean, like, you know, like you're doing something that kind of is open ended, like this could keep going for as long as you are still interested in doing that.
Yeah.
And it seems like you enjoy it to me. Like I can feel that you like doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I think that for the things that I enjoy doing, I'm not going to stop doing. It's just a matter again of balance, because I've actually had to back out of some shows and turn down some opportunities so that I could have time to focus on things that I knew were being neglected, like art, you know, there's so many different types of art that people do. And for me personally, it's like, I need certain types of art that I'm doing that has to do with like the world building. And then I want to do some art that's like maybe more cathartic. That's not like really, I'm not doing it for anyone else. It's just kind of more like a nice mental health break type of art. And then maybe one reason I need to have some of that time is also because, hey, like I took on a project that's just so I can help, you know, I have an additional income stream that has nothing. It's guaranteed money. Like, you know, it's like a little more commercial, but it's not commercial because it's still Mumbot style, like something, you know, commission based, or, you know, there's different types of things that I might take on. But once you take on something that's, again, it's not like just you making something you want to make and hoping someone will buy it. When you take on something like that, that's a project that someone is paying you for, it's different, you know. It's like it's not the same. So I don't mind doing that once in a while, but then again, it can also become, you want to make sure it's not a distraction from your goals. So you need to be able to balance it. So if I take on too many things like that, obviously then things are getting neglected that are also equally as important, if not more so, because of the like macro level of what your goals in life are, your, you know, the intentions that you're, you know, like, what is my point in life right now?
Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, I have like specific things that I need to get done, and I have to make sure that I'm managing all of those other little side quests.
Yeah. With world building of like this, because you have all, like, the last time we spoke and the amount of research I have to do on people. So like, you're in Web3, you are doing this web or this world building. How do you, throughout the year, how do you kind of give yourself goalposts of like, I've built this much out in this whole world with Mumbot as a brand. I've done this much with Web3. I've traveled this much. Those types of like steps. Is there a goalpost, or is it like, if I get anything done with how busy it's been, we're good?
It's actually a little bit of both, which is really funny, because there are times where it's like, that's really funny. It's like a really funny question, because I'm just like, I was literally picturing those exact moments where I was like, ooh, nice. I like hit this goalpost. Yeah. And then like, there's other times where I've been like, man, if I just got like, as long as I got like these 10 things done, I'm good. Yeah. I get a cookie. I get a cookie now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some stuff is so long-term, dude. Like, people don't realize, like, there's stuff that I was working at, or like relationship building too, like for years. So whether it be in the toy space or in the art kind of lowbrow world or in Web3, like it's all a different, completely different animal. And you, sure, there's some overlap and there's some, you know, there's things that inform other things, but ultimately you're starting from scratch in every single space. So it's just like time and effort and showing up and, like, again, like being intentional and everything that you do, being mindful about like how you're doing it.
Yeah. I get stuck. My wife gives me like the hardest time when it comes to, like, it's just one project to the next in my brain. And then I have these bigger projects that don't really have an end. They're just statements almost. So, the friend of mine asked like, oh, well, what do you want Toys on Tap to be? It's like, well, I want it to kind of be the hub. There's no goal end there. It's just at one point, 20 years in the future, I'll look back and say like, oh, I think now I'm that.
It's interesting. I think it's also normal for things to evolve over time. Mm-hmm. So you could have this kind of mindset right now, but then down the line, it might be like something occurred to you that like you haven't tapped into yet. Toys on Tap.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
like Toys on Tap, I'm totally just winging it. Like, you have like a random boba tea tapioca balls. I don't know. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Toys on Tap, boba
checking
tea.
That off my list right there. That's where we're headed.
Or like you do like a collaboration, you know, with like a tavern where you can have like a series that's in person on YouTube at like, and then you guys get beer on tap like together and you have your podcast. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just literally just like randomly throwing out some ideas that just occurred to me, but those are things that could, it be, you have a YouTube show later and then that becomes a whole other thing. So, I mean, I don't know. I think things evolve. And then also though, things just are like with Web3, for example, that opened up a whole new world for artists and collectors and, you know, people building with all the different things that, the technology could, they could benefit from. And I think that, you know, that's not something that most people could predict 10 years ago. I mean, some people could, but they were geniuses.
Yeah. That is not this person. I could not. But so this year, as you, I mean, getting so busy and trying to say no to things, having to say no to Taipei and go to DesignerCon, like those types of things. Over the course of your career, how are you learning which ones, and this sounds so crazy to say, which ones it's okay to say no to and which ones, if you say no to, might have a different effect on your, like, how do you structure your life in that?
That's a really good question. So, okay, for like, just for, to use your example with Taipei, I think with Taipei, how do I prioritize with that? Well, if it's my first time ever doing that show, I might go do that one. But like, it had already done DesignerCon, for example. Like, and I might go try TTF because it's worth it to go give it a try, give it a shot. Especially, that's such an important show, in my opinion. And like, even just for Recon, like to go there and experience and soak in all the things and do research on, you know, what people are doing out there. I think it's worth it to go. But I've already done that show a bunch of times and think you have to also think about the expenses. Like, that is a much more expensive investment to go all the way out there and do that. And at this point, it's like, there's several factors. Like, I'm going to be super real here because I hope that this is helpful to people. I'm trying to offer some value. So number one, I think that it's really helpful when someone is giving you some sort of spotlight or giving you some sort of like, I don't know, like a, you're not necessarily a sponsorship, but you're getting, you know, you're being introduced to a new audience by someone with an existing presence in that place. So that is not the case all the time. And I don't think artists should listen. Most of us don't get that. So, and I didn't get that kind of stuff for most of my time as an artist. That's more recent where I've had that kind of situation. But like, I'm not afraid to go set up and do all the things and, you know, I've done it, right? So like, I've put myself out there on my own dime and like, I've done all those things. I've got to prioritize things. So let's just say that some shows care a little more about the artists that come all the way out and do that and invest in coming across the world. And you can see it. You can see which shows like notice and care. And they also like promote those artists because they know that this person invested a lot. They put a lot into their booth. Now, everyone is worth like some promotion, including people in Artist Alley, you know, the people who pay for the cheapest table because that's what they could do. They're still showing up. They're still bringing all their stuff. They're still providing all the things that the people buying tickets are going to want to come buy. You know what I mean? So I guess what I'm trying to get at is I'm taking notes on the shows that take care of me. For me, like, DesignerCon's a no-brainer. I've been going every year for 7 or 8 years now. I love that show. I do well at that show. It's also kind of feels like home base-ish. I mean, for me, that like the people who show up there everyone, like from the other creators to the collectors to the organizers, you know, I do feel very like at home in that particular show. And again, it's also like less of an investment because it is in the US. So since I'm US based, that helps a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you're describing this, like, cause I talk to so many artists that travel all over that do the craziest amount of shows. Like I am this coming year, I will be upping it from 1 to 3. And that already feels like too much. but talking about how shows interact with you, how they treat you, like, do they, my favorite thing about DesignerCon is Ben is walking around like that.
Yeah. And he actually asks you, yeah, how you did and stuff.
And so that, like, that matters, even though I don't know Ben on a personal level, like that matters. And I think the harder part is you hear about these other shows that aren't big, they're smaller, or even bigger shows. And it's like, man, I was just a fly in the room. That's all that mattered. They just got me there and that was it. And that's disheartening.
Dude, at least here's the thing. That's a beautiful show. Okay. Like so DesignerCon is, it has so many things going for it, and the community and the organizers care, and, you know, the community, again, like I said, like just fucking phenomenal. Okay. Now TTF is also a gorgeous show, and they have like a different situation where like you get your booth built out nice, and like everything looks so clean and cool. And like, again, you have, once you have an audience, they are amazing. Also very sweet. Like they bring you boba, they bring you treats and stuff. And no, it's really a great community as well. Though, like, again, like I said, like I know that it's a harder market to tap into as well. It's just, yeah, like whatever, wherever a show is lacking, you just hope that certain things make up for it. Right. And so it's still, it's undeniable like that it is a beautiful show. Like everybody who shows up there knows exactly what they're doing. Everybody has such amazing, like unique, very much their own brand, you know, and it's well represented and creative, and just, you know, you just know that you're always going to see something awesome, like in every aisle. But yeah, it as a vendor, like as a person coming in from far, I have you heard my comments already. Those are my comments. I try not to go too deep with that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just how it is. But dude, like every show has their issues. You know what I mean? Like every show. So I've done a lot of the shows, and there's still some new ones I might try next year. Curious about Korea. I've always wanted to go to Korea. Never been. And it's kind of funny because now we've got Collected Con moving to LA from Chicago, and I'm excited about that. Five Points Festival was also kind of like a home to me for, you know, I've done every show that they've had since they started, and that's definitely been interesting because they've been going through such changes over the last couple of years. So I'm curious to see how that will be for 2026. So I'm curious. I mean, I'm willing to try whatever, because I do believe that, like, we have such a small community, it's such a niche of a niche, like a sub niche, you know, and this toy world that we're in, the art toy world, there's even more subcategories within it, right? There's like the kaiju, there's the Sofubi, there's like the resin people.
Yeah.
And then there's the kind of more action figure type guys and girls. And, you know, I just feel like we need to all be supportive of each other. Like when, if they, like, anybody is, like, we want DesignerCon to do well, even though they moved to Vegas and, you know, that was a big shift, right? Now we want CollectedCon to do well, even though they moved from Chicago to LA. I think a lot of people were bummed because they're from the Midwest and they were looking for a show like that. And it's just, unfortunately, I don't think they gave it a big try. You know, they gave it such a big push. But I just don't think, I mean, it's not for me to say, but it, you know, there's only so much they can do. Like, people have to show up. They have to show up. And if the and numbers don't lie, like, if the people don't show up, you have to pivot. And they, that's what they're doing. And it's already shown to be a huge hit. Like, LA obviously has the massive audience, like, for that. It's proven already. Like, you know, so there's tons of artists, tons of collectors. And then in addition to that, you have this other element to it, which is actually one of the things that was great about DCon when it was in California. There's this whole other element, which is like the people who are talent or what's the word? Like, people from the entertainment industry looking for IP or what else? There's like people looking for...
It's like any kind of collaboration. There's just people that are just storming that place.
Yeah. They're just coming in like hawks, you know, like, ooh, let me grab this. Let me get that. And then would you like to partner with, like, you know, that's how Hot Topic found me. It was like, you know, just they were there. They were there merchandising people. But anyway, I don't know. I think I'm just like rambling.
It's my favorite thing about this podcast. Don't worry. Are you going to CollectedCon?
Yeah, I am.
That's good to know, because I'm going to reach out about something important there. We are doing something new. We went from not tabling at CollectedCon to now having a double booth where I'm doing live interviews and bringing people in to like film it and stuff. And then I'll sell on the side of the other one. But so if you want to be one of those people, I'll put you in.
I have actually just locked in. Threadless is going to do the same sponsored booth as last time for DCon.
Heck yeah. Awesome.
So, yeah. So I'll be there. I'm with Threadless this time.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm excited to do that, because what you're describing with all these shows, my goal has been to figure out like where I fit and where Toys on Tap fits everywhere. But you can really only find that out by going to these places. And so it was just like happenstance that CollectedCon moved to LA, which is super easy because I'm down in San Diego. Vegas isn't that far. I'm in San Diego, so it's like a quick trip. But yeah, the shows on the East Coast, I just never get to. And then worldwide, I haven't gotten to that point. And so the things that you're describing are the things I'm looking for in the local shows.
Dude, why don't you try a little ToyCon UK sesh? I feel like that would be a next step for you, because the talent out there is so, so epic as well. And I feel like they are, like, it's not a secret. Like, people know the artists that are out there. Like, they're pretty popular, you know. But it's like an underrated situation, in my opinion. In ToyCon UK, I got to do a couple years ago, and I've been wanting to go back. I still haven't had a chance, but timing.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
now kind of is tough because it's like so close to when I'm doing SafubiCon. And I tried both SafubiCons because I wanted to see, well, which one might be better with my schedule. And I'm thinking March is the better one for me. So, and that's close to when I think UK is. So that's tough. But
that's the goal. We sponsored their lanyards and their badges last year as like a fun, like, we like this show. Cause I like Blair and his partner and what they're doing out there. Yeah, it's like, it really is just, how do I make that jump to going from national to international? How did you, like, what your first step that you did that when you are, like, looking at these other artists and describing what, it, like, these growing pains, how did you grow, like, jump that far?
You mean, like, being international in doing the art, international show? Well, I actually moved to Thailand. I was living in Thailand.
Unfair advantage.
Yeah. So like, well, I mean, in a way, like that was really huge because I was able to access, once you're in Asia already, it's really easy. It's like going, you know, if you're in the US, it's like going from like, you know, different states almost like the, you know, a few hours flight and now you're in Chicago, a few more hours you're in California, you know, like a few more hours you can go to Florida. Like in Asia it's the same. It's like they're all very different markets, they're completely different culturally, you know. People talk about it like as if it's all like, I get a lot of questions from people when I'm in the shows in the US, like, you do a lot in Asia, like what's that like? And I'm like, well, which part? Because it's all super different. Like,
yeah,
I've done the Philippines. I love the Philippines. Also, fun fact, I am an honorary Filipino because my kids are half Filipino. My husband's Filipino. So, but I love the Philippines. Amazing experience there. Amazing community. To this day, some of the collectors who I met there are some consistently like consistent supporters. So that's been amazing. Who else? Oh, yeah, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Japan, and like each one is like different, right? Like each country, like obviously it seems obvious to people who are from out there, but like in the States it's obviously not obvious. Like people ask me all the time, well, what's it like in Asia? And I'm like, well, and then I break down like what are my insights on some of them, some quick like bullet points, you know.
Yeah, that is like,
I don't know.
You hear about, my favorite is in talking to some of the artists, they'll hear, like, they have gone to, like, Japan, like, Neil, like, he was in Japan recently, and how he describes toy shows when he's in Japan versus how when he's here, it's like, some of these markets feel so different in how they function, but they still feel like their own version of a collector's market.
Yeah. And Japan, it's like, even there, it's like, well, which show did you do in Japan? Because you've got Wonderfest, which is like a huge show. And it's more of like a Comic-Con. And then you've got like the one that I've been doing, which is a very intimate, curated, highly curated Safubi show. With incredible, like it's highly curated. So obviously like every single booth is top notch, like awesome, very original IP only. Nothing with, there's no mashup nostalgia stuff. There's no borrowing, like, you know, inspiration from, you know, any popular existing character. Like that is not a thing at that show. This is strictly creators doing only their own original IPs. And then you have something where it's like more kaiju-y, like that's, I would say, probably like the Mandarake Fests, which is what Neil just did. And then, you know, like there's still some cute stuff in there. I'm sure you watched some of the lives or saw some of the stuff people were posting, but But yeah, like, so like the, like I said, like within each like place you go, you have to be prepared for what might be different. Plus, not to mention, everyone, based on what you do, is your experience will be different than other people, you know? So like in Hong Kong, I feel like you might crush it because you work with some stuff that has, I mean, I'm not super familiar with everything that you've ever released, but I've seen some of it. And I know that you do have, like, for example, that recent, the Kickstarter one.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's like got a little bit of the nostalgia play and the popular culture vibe. And I feel like that would be good in Hong Kong. I don't know. Maybe.
Looks like I'm going to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
When you are looking towards the end, because I mean, we are at the very end of 2025 and now looking over 2026, what are some of the things that you are putting in place that you want to hit, these milestones along in 2026?
I mean, to be honest with you, we've already got a lot of stuff planned out. Right now, it's there's a bigger focus on the world building aspect of what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of goals for toy releases. I have had a Kickstarter in the works for the past like 5 months. And that is not like, it's not like, it's not a secret. It's the Girl from the Fourth Floor figure. So that one has just sort of been taking a really long time. And at this point, there's no reason to rush it anymore because we have insight that like Kickstarters don't do well around holidays. So that was some tips that I was given. And well, why would I... Like, even though we're close to launching it, why would I push it out at a time when it could fail, right? Like, I mean, it could fail anyway, but might as well try to give it the best window of timing that what we were advised about. So there's that. And my community is so amazing and supportive and patient, like, seriously, like, and they know that I'm doing my best. So I think that's really cool. So like there's that one, there's that figure. Then there's like another figure I have in the works with Strange Cat, which I'm excited about because we haven't really put much out since my last collaboration with Bakumba, which was the Shumikumba. And oh no, the Mini Mossies. We did the Mini Mossies. That was our last releases. And then what else? I think aside from toys, I have a personal toy project that I'm also doing on the side, which is, I don't want to like say, actually, I've kind of talked about it personally with some people, but yeah, I don't like to jinx it. So I'm not going to say exactly until I'm farther along. And then I have another exciting thing in the works as well, which I also can't say. And the game that me and my buddy Cyrus had been working on, we're in a new phase now where we're in the process of looking for funding to be able to just polish up our beta release, like prototype release. I mean, we've had a playable prototype, but we need to polish it up a little more just so that we can get it out into the world. And then so right now that's like in the works as well, and I'm really, really excited about that because, you know, like that's like huge and no one's really even had hardly anyone. We've had like a few people who've had a chance to have an experience with it.
Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now sponsors Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
Which was awesome. Like, maybe a handful of people who came to our like XR stage demo at Zero Space once, but yeah.
I mean, that's an insane amount of stuff going into 2026.
And that's just like the toy, mostly toy and world building time. That's not even like any of the other stuff that
yeah,
I'm doing.
That's not shows, painting, none of that. So that's an insane amount. I'm pumped to hear about the Kickstarter. Kickstarters are like so fun to run, and they're like very nerve. It's a weird, like, I don't know, touching the frayed part of a cord.
You did very well. Your Kickstarter was huge.
We have one. So
what are your secrets? What are the tips? What are your secrets?
My tip is that I have yet to do something that is original IP. So it is an unfair thing to tell people like, this is how you do it. When the first two I did that did well, it was tapping into a nostalgia market. And the next one coming up is that claw, the blind box claw. I don't know that I'm ever going to be in a spot where I want to fund my own IP like that. Like, I do have one that I want to bring to life so bad, and I'm just slowly waiting to make that happen. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I have tips. It's like, you're such a bigger artist than me. Like, the tips, you have so many more eyes on you. So like, you have the community that's going to come in and support.
I'm just as nervous as anybody else. I have no idea.
With the shows and the world building coming up in 2026 and the game, do we have the game, especially because of the excitement level surrounding it, is there a release date in mind for that?
Well, no, because what we'll want to do next is I will do a private beta release for my collectors and my community, probably through the Discord. And then we want to bring it to like art shows, kind of like an art piece, you know. We want to bring it to like, I haven't even asked them yet. I mean, they already know that I'm interested. They were welcoming me. The Pictoplasma was in welcoming me to the Berlin. If I do come out, they were very welcoming. I did a keynote at their New York conference last year, and I was thinking it would be cool to set up like an immersive exhibit in a space, if possible, during their conference, and then also have a playable prototype available. And, you know, we would have really cool pieces that people could collect in person. So like physical and digital collectibles that are connected only to that experience. Mm-hmm. And then also like if you have played it in person, then you would get like, you know, there'd be something that would, you essentially would be able to get into the game on your own afterwards. So like just slowly presenting it at maybe like some gaming conferences. I mean, here's the thing. I want to just expand all the time. I just want to expand what I'm doing all the time. And one of the ways is through that. I mean, one of the ways is through like toys and sometimes it's through art, right? So like I also have like some art focused projects that I'm working on for 2026 that are kind of connected in a way to like what we're doing with the game. So, you know, more can tell more later.
Yeah.
I can tell more about that later. Yeah. But I do think more of like what we want to do at first is to finish the beta in a nice polished prototype version, I'll give access to my community and to people who get to see it in person at any of our events as we bring it around. We're actually bringing it to, I know Cyrus has an event in Thailand where he wants to showcase it. So there's like a, we have a bunch. We have like a whole list of like some ideal places where people would, I think, appreciate it. And we could also get some good feedback about it and see what, you know, what we would need for the next steps with the game to maybe eventually get it like available on Steam or something, you know?
Yeah. I can't wait for that so much. I mean, we brushed over it a little bit. You're in Florida right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm
How's
from Miami.
That going? Are you like presenting something somewhere? Are you in a gallery? Like, what's up with this week? There's so much stuff over there.
Well, no, I was invited to be a part of a few things, but one, I was right after DCon, like already swamped with a lot of projects. Actually, it's really, I feel really bad because I started off saying like how I had to pass on things recently and say no to things. Dude, I still accept way more than I should be. I'm extremely bad at passing on things.
Yeah.
And people who know me, people who really know me know that. It's a problem. So I do my best. Dude, it's like I even was invited to, there's like a beach towel art show. I was invited to do an art towel for the beach towel art show here. And I wanted to do it. I really wanted to do it. But I was already pulling all-nighters because my daughter was sick last week. So I was pulling all-nighters trying to play catch up on other projects that I have been working on since November. And there was one like in particular I needed to finish before this started. So I was even pulling an all-nighter up until the day I left here to come here and just finishing that, a couple illustrations and some paintings, and then shipping off stuff like for like some holiday markets. Like people wanted to like have my stuff in their holiday market. So I was like preparing those, and then some collectors who picked stuff up from my shop, I had to get those out. And then, you know, there's like two art shows that are group shows that are friends that are doing stuff. And I love that they're doing stuff. And I just want to be like, you know, I want to support and I want to be a part of it. And so like, you know, it's just, I don't even remember what your first question was. Oh, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
one of my favorite people who's also one of my biggest supporters, shout out DJJD, he invited me to live paint for his 50th birthday. So he was having an event and had some live painting planned. And I guess one of the artists that he had also asked, his name's Apoc, he came out and had his daughter as his assistant. It was really cute. And I'm saying she's five. She was like 20, 25. But I thought it was cute that like they're a father-daughter team. And and so we just live painted together during his birthday event. And also there was, this is random, but like I was supposed to have another piece in BitBasel. It was a digital artwork. There was like a miscommunication issue, and part of the reason is because like the X app messaging system decided to create like an encrypted messages update right in the middle of everyone planning these things. Within that week was also DesignerCon. So you can only imagine like we were missing each other's messages. We didn't even see. I couldn't find some messages people sent me. Yeah, I like saw stuff that like was going on, and I just, you know, I'm so grateful to be brought out here by, you know, DJJD. So like I'm already out here. I did my live painting stuff and I was able to go check out the art fairs, which was really awesome. And that also was another thing that was cool. Secret Walls was amazing. The murals are amazing, obviously, in Wynwood. Can I just like say something about the digital art portion?
Yeah, please. Always. Art
Basel. So, okay. There's a section for the first time called, I mean, there's been like a presence, like digital art has had a presence, but this is like more of a traditional art scene, right? At Art Basel.
Mm-hmm.
And I love like a lot of the artists that they're showing like every year, all the time. But the digital art portion was kind of like a big giant team up of like all these different entities, and they were put together by this one person, Eli, I don't know how to say his last name, Shine or Sheen, something mm-hmm. like that. And he, it's called 010. So basically I'll just say that, 010. So 010 puts together all of these different entities, like from like some notable artists like X-Copy, Beeple, Jack Butcher, and there were many, but they basically featured all of these different people. Now, one of the things that was so cool was, first of all, like that they were all working together.
Mm-hmm.
They were all like, their whole section was very like, it's like they were welcoming you to go from here to there. Like, oh, it just, the flow was really cool. And then also, FYI, the buzz about it, I was excited about it from since before the show started, because I had seen like a little bit about it. I'd seen like a press release and stuff. But as the show was starting, that's when like it blew up. Like PR, I don't know who was in charge, but or if it was just organic, but it was, you know, a lot. It was like all over all my feeds. And mostly what was funny was like everyone I know who was a part of it or who cares about digital art was, you know, talking about it in a very positive light. Everybody outside, like in line and out, just out and about, all I heard was chatter about, everywhere I went, I heard someone, at least one person, there's chatter like talking about, oh, you got to get over there to 010. You got to go check out that section. It's so cool. Oh, the robot dogs, or oh, this or that. And then I walked around. I saw like all the other art, and then a lot of stuff I liked, took a lot of, you know, photos and videos of stuff. And then I get to the 010 section and it's popping off and great energy. People were like so interested in interacting with the works, because a lot of the works is they're very interactive.
Mm-hmm.
IX Shells, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but she's super nice. She was there, and her collaborator who worked on the project with her was there, and they were telling me a little bit about it. And you know, people were just playing, like it reacts to your movements. So like her piece was really fun to just stand there and see how people enjoyed participating. But almost all of those pieces had some interactive element. Like, that was really cool to see. And also, they were just so welcoming to me. Like, when I came over there, I know everyone in that community, but it was just like different. Like, I just didn't get the same vibe in the other parts of the show. And same for like Super Chief. They had a whole setup at Scope, and they've always been really great too, and big proponents of like artists and digital art in general, but like artists in general as well. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what I guess I'm getting at is I think that if anyone sees any coverage, I think it's really interesting. I don't know the account. It's like art.net or something, but they finally, like, it was the first one I saw where they actually let people explain what his whole project was about, and it was so good.
Mamba, it's always so good to have you on. The last part is plugging the stuff that you want people to know about you, and then we get to say goodbye one more time.
Wait, let me take a screenshot of you. Okay, because I want to post that later.
Okay.
Yeah, so wait, what am I doing? What am I supposed to do?
Plugging where you want to point people for this last bit. Yeah.
Yeah. You can actually I recommend joining my Discord. I didn't do that last time. I recommend joining my Discord, which you can find the link to in my link tree. But I am pretty much updating my Discord with the most effort. You know, that is where I tap in every single day and I create my announcements with kind of like my schedule for the next foreseeable future, you know. And I don't do like a full-on calendar or anything, but I give people like what's happening in the next month or two type of thing. One to three months, I usually like give announcements with those updates and all the things I have going on. And it's also where you can get alpha. I have a collector's channel. I have, you know, a lot in my Discord. So go to my link tree and you can find my link tree in all of my bios, and everything is at Mumbot on all socials except for TikTok on Mumbot World.